Hey Central Ohio, the nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
Okay, folks, welcome to a new edition of Life on Planet Porky. And I'm delighted to say that joining me again today, the wonderful and rather lovely, although I don't want to sound sexist, Leslie Ann Jones. Leslie Ann, thank you very much indeed for joining me on
the studio
today.
My pleasure to be here.
I have to say, we've had a very big response to the strength of your words about my pal Sir Geoffrey Boycott from our last podcast. It was a few days ago, obviously, but rumblings of that still going on, but you obviously stick by what you say, and you got a lot of praise for what you said.
Never an excuse to lay a finger on a woman.
Well, yeah, absolutely. We won't go into that again, but all I want to say is you made your point very strongly, and that's been appreciated by our millions of listeners. Now, you are, of course, the woman about town. I constantly refer to you as the rock chick writer extraordinaire, and you've had quite an exciting dinner. So I think it's a new, rather sexy location this week, haven't you?
Very sexy and quite unexpected location, actually. About 2 months ago, I was invited to curate a library for a new branch of the Hoxton Hotel.
Curate? What does that mean?
Curate,
sorry.
Put together a library?
What, a library of books?
Will you personally select a library of books which will go into the hotel?
Blimey.
And in return...
Sounds like an old-fashioned hotel.
A hotel which wants somebody to select books that readers might like to read while they're staying.
Right.
And so I personally choose them, and then I write inside the front page of the book why I selected this book and what it means to me. So it's a very personal collection. And in return for this little
curation... Any of your books involved in that?
Two of them, actually.
Oh, what a surprise.
I was asked to include them. I would never have offered them.
I should have given you my number one bestseller. There's an awful lot of bubbly in Brazil.
Well, there you go.
So Alan Brazil's life story.
Well, we have to put that one into the collection.
Well, definitely.
So I was asked to put two, and they chose which two, which were Tumbling Dice, my memoir, and also Bohemian Rhapsody, the Freddie Mercury biography. So those two are in
bestseller.
There. Bestseller. Thank you. Yes, I'm very thrilled with that.
Yep.
And so in return, I'm invited to stay in the hotel and to bring my friends and family for dinner.
Okay, why didn't I get the invite?
Well, you did, actually.
Oh, did I?
Yeah, we kind of got the wrong night. It was going to be Monday.
Okay.
You were out with somebody much more important on Monday.
Oh, was
anyway.
I?
Yeah, Alan Brazil, I think.
Oh, I think I was, actually. Yeah.
But next time. So we stay in the hotel, which is terribly glamorous.
Yes.
And it's very accessible. So just over Blackfriars Bridge.
So what I'm going to say is, for the location-wise, for the millions of our listeners who are lucky enough not to have to live in London, it's not very far from the Daily Express building where I was king of the world as news editor of the Daily Express,
like
south side of Blackfriars Bridge.
Spitting distance.
Right.
So come out of Blackfriars Tube, over the bridge, past the old express building.
Yes.
Not quite as far down as Southwark Tube Station.
No.
It's just on the right-hand side there.
Oh, is it?
Big industrial building.
Hang on, there's a hotel there already called the... Is it the...
I think there's an Ibis there.
Is it near there?
No, it is near there, but this is much more glamorous.
Right, okay.
It's one of these old factory buildings, which, thank goodness, they didn't knock it down. They refurbished it.
I saw them rebuilding it when I used to walk past.
It's pretty big.
Yeah.
And what I like about the Hoxton, a big plug here for Jessica Callahan, who invited me to become involved in this.
Yes.
They've set it up as a workspace. So you are you're a freelance designer or writer or a filmmaker or whatever you are.
Yes.
You don't have an office because it's very expensive to have a dedicated office in London these days.
Yes.
The Hoxton welcomes you to come and use the Hoxton as your office.
Right.
So you can have your meetings in there, you can bring people to lunch.
Well, like a private room.
Or you can just actually in the workspace, which is on the ground floor, where there are two bars. two fabulous restaurants.
Yeah.
And you can sit there, have your meetings. 12
right.
people can come in. You
yeah.
can do all this. You can take them for lunch in there, mm. order coffee and drinks throughout the day. So you've got an office.
So you had a dinner there, did you?
I had dinner last night with my daughters.
Oh, lovely.
Both of them.
Very good.
And we had this sea bream. Gigantic fish. It was
yeah.
like a shark
yeah,
in a
yeah,
dish.
Yeah.
Came up in one of these, you know, wonderful kind of Spanish
very nice.
Dishes with a lid on.
Yep.
Opened it up. The whole place filled with the aromas. Of
yes.
this massive, massive fish between the three of us with all beautiful vegetables and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Charcuterie plates
sounds
and
right.
cheese boards and,
yeah.
oh, and the okay. desserts. I'm not really yeah. a sweet tooth person.
No, nor me.
But this millefeuille, even that is a sexy word,
what's
isn't
it? Called?
A millefeuille.
What's
it means, it me- it's French for many, many leaves.
Send me the millefeuille.
Yeah. Feuille is a leaf.
Millefeuille.
So a thousand leaves, this
yeah,
is.
A thousand
of,
leaves,
of
yeah.
very, very thin
leaves,
chocolate
yeah, yeah,
with salted
yeah.
caramel cream in between. I mean, all
see,
the
I
stuff we shouldn't
eat. See, I
could
because
really.
Of my diabetes too, you
well,
see.
You are.
I have to make sacrifices.
But I'll show it to you.
Anyway, sounds like
gorgeous
a,
place.
Sounds like a very exciting evening. And
I'll take you there.
That, folks, was, we told you that tale just to prove that after a lifetime of freeloading, Leslie Ann Jones has still not lost her touch.
I'm
when
still
it comes
getting
to
it.
Still
I'm getting it. Getting
I still get it. Now, in a previous podcast, we talked about a member of the royal family, Meghan Markle, and we all made our views clear on that. One of the people I want to talk to you about, and I'm not having a go at the royal family here or attacking them and all that, but I'm getting perplexed by the stupidity, the idiocy, and the sheer uselessness of HRH Prince Andrew, the Duke of York. What do you think?
He did it.
He did what?
Well, he obviously had sex with an underage girl.
You think so?
Definitely.
With a 17-year-old girl?
Well...
Would that wouldn't be underage in this country, would
underage
it?
Underage tends to vary from state to state
yes,
in America.
Yes,
so, yes. So, yes, I'm sure he'd had sex with this woman. She's
yes.
called Virginia, isn't she?
Called Virginia, and... The
famous picture of him.
Well, the famous picture of him with his arm around her is taken in.
Although
a,
they say that's not his hand now.
Well,
because the fingers
to make,
weren't
yeah.
porky enough.
Rubbish.
Were they yours?
No, obviously not.
No, that was complete nonsense.
But that was taken in Belgrave in this country. That
yeah.
that was in Ghislaine Maxwell's home, right?
Ghislaine, even.
Is it Ghislaine?
She would say Ghislaine, yeah.
Ghislaine. That was in her house in.
Yeah. And she's in the picture.
She's in the picture.
But
she's standing in the background.
She's a different colour from his hand. So, you know, photography in those days was actually quite hit and miss, wasn't it? You could often have a snap of a
yeah.
group of people that didn't look quite right, which is what they're saying, that photograph doesn't
why?
Look...
Why? Are you saying that the cameras weren't as efficient in those days?
I think that things... Yeah, you know, the camera does lie. The camera definitely does lie, even though we're told it never does. I think photography was a little bit more hit and miss and blurred
yeah.
back then.
Oh, there's definitely
anyway,
all
the picture
that.
Looks genuine to me. They're saying the height is wrong, that him standing
no,
next
no,
to
Virginia, no, I've seen comparison heights.
I think it's a genuine
But you're photo. Basically saying here that... Prince Andrew was shagging this lady, and that violates laws in some American states, even if it happened in this country? Because I think it's supposed to... in fact, she's supposed to have been flown to the south of France as well.
Well, she claims all over the place.
Italy,
but
yeah.
After he was convicted, Jeffrey Epstein,
yes.
this is, after his conviction,
yes.
Prince Andrew
in 2012,
continued to
he
fly
did, yeah.
to America and stay in properties owned by Jeffrey Epstein.
Well, there's a famous picture of them walking through Central Park together.
Not only that, but there's a bit of footage of him waving goodbye
right.
to a girl
from the house.
Sort of waving out the window.
From the $40 million house in Manhattan.
There
that's
you
right.
go.
Yeah.
So what would he be doing? You know, as far as we know, there were no business deals between him and Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah. Yeah.
So why would he be hanging around with a convicted paedophile to do what other than to meet young women?
Yeah.
We know that he was a bit of a lad. We know about...
Well, I wouldn't even describe him as a bit of a lad. He's a thickhead and an ignorant and...
Don't hold back.
No. I've met him a couple of times. Not that I've ever spoken to him, but I've been... things that he's been at. One of them, in fact, was a golf tournament, and it was the Open. I can't remember where it was, but it was in, you know, one of the links courses where the Open takes place. And he arrives in a Rolls Royce and he gets out. But his sense of entitlement, everybody will tell you, is absolute. It's absolute, his sense of entitlement. And that's for two reasons. Firstly, because he's the Duke of York, but he's his mother's favourite, apparently, according to royal experts.
Well, there was a rumour, and never, ever discounted or disproved, or denied, that his father is not the Duke of Edinburgh, but the Earl of Porchester, who was the Queen's racing manager, if
really?
You remember. And there is a photograph.
No, that can't be true.
Well, there's a picture of Andrew standing beside the Earl of Porchester at a race meeting.
Yes.
And they look identical.
Yeah, but I mean, that, I'm sorry, I must protest. That is impinging the validity and the reputation of Her Majesty the Queen.
It has long been said.
I will not have that. I'm sorry. I'm striking that out of the conversation in Planet Porky. I will not have it. Remember, for years and years and years, people would put a picture of Prince Harry and what's his name?
James.
The cad.
James Thing.
Yeah.
What was his name?
We'll remember it in a minute.
The soldier, yeah.
Together and say, Harry must be James. We'll remember his name in a minute. Yeah. Son. And in fact, James, whatever his name is, hadn't met Princess Diana until 2 years after Harry was born.
How do we know that?
Well,
they could easily have met before then.
No, I don't think
There's
so.
There's that famous picture of her presenting a trophy to him.
Oh, that's right.
At
she's
a polo meeting.
She's coquettishly giggling.
And everyone said that's the first time they met. How do we know they didn't meet sooner?
Well, I mean, she put it about a bit, Diana, with no disrespect to her. Obviously, she's dead now, and God rest her soul. But she. She had such an unhappy marriage.
Prince Charles was in
it. She definitely saw, you know, approval from other men.
Look, she watched her husband doing it. She was 19 when she married him. She had no say at that time. She subsequently discovered that Prince Charles was in a railway siding the night before their wedding with Camilla Parker Bowles.
Shagging Camilla, yeah.
So there you go. Yeah. So Diana grows up. Guess what? This happens.
Yes.
And she goes, sorry. Hang on a minute. What's good for the goose, good for the gander. Yeah. And she then started to have a life of her own. Who could have blamed her?
That story, by the way, about the railway siding,
that
was fascinating because what happened there was the Sunday Mirror got it right and their reporter had been tracking down this rumour that Charles was... So they thought they were doing quite a romantic story. They took a picture of the Royal Train in this siding in Gloucestershire. Obviously, it's near where... what's his home called? Highbury?
Tetbury. It's near Tetbury, isn't it?
Tetbury, Gloucestershire. Highgrove, Tetbury, Gloucestershire. And so they were doing a sort of wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Look,
thought it was Diana in the train.
Exactly.
Oh, no.
So what they're saying is, you know, Charles and Diana can't wait to, you know, get it together. And so as not to embarrass the Queen or the nation, they're actually, you know, getting a leg over on a railway, on the Royal Train in a railway siding.
A bit on the siding.
A bit on the siding. Well done. Excellent. You haven't lost your tabloid touch. And... and so the Mirror thought they were just, like, almost giving Charles a thumbs up, you know, yeah, the nation loves you, Charles. In fact, of course, he was absolutely horrified because, as you quite rightly say, the woman on board the train was Camilla, not Diana.
Nightmare.
So
what a nightmare.
So then the whole of the royal family is like, what was Charles doing in this railway carriage? Diana realises, hang on, I was at home that night. It wasn't me on the railway carriage. And it caused a terrible scandal.
And didn't Camilla give Charles a bracelet?
Yes, C&C.
Yeah.
And Charles
the night
and
before the wedding, and Diana saw it. Imagine how, as a bride, you would feel.
That's right.
Walking up the aisle in St. Paul's Cathedral, knowing what had gone on the night before.
That's right.
Everyone said she looked miserable as sin. No wonder.
Absolutely no wonder. But the most amazing thing about it was that the Buckingham Palace then had to go to Charles and say, were you on that train? And Charles had to say, no, I wasn't. Yeah. But in fact, he was. So it was a fantastic battle between, because obviously after the Sunday Mirror got on Sunday, everybody republished it on Monday morning. You know, the Love Train, fantastic, wasn't it? You know, self-made headline. And Charles just had to keep issuing a statement saying it wasn't me. But
didn't he later say, I'm the heir to the throne, I can do whatever I like?
Well,
at which point I went right off him.
Yeah, well, probably. Charles is all right. I met him once. After he and Diana got married, because he was the Prince of Wales, the first place they went was North Wales. And North Wales is dreadful in certain parts, like Llandudno, Rhyl.
Snowdonia is beautiful.
Snowdonia is beautiful. But
you're talking to a Welsh woman, so don't do too much slanging off here.
This was the coast. Rhyl, Prestatyn, Llandudno, Colwyn Bay, you know, and all that. And it's pretty dreadful in those days. Maybe it's better now, but it was grim. You know, it was only 20 years after the war, 30 years after the war, and it really run down. And it suddenly dawned on Charles. This is their first, like, you know, visit to the public. So Charles gets out the car, and everywhere they stop in Colwyn Bay, Llandudno, gets out first, waves to the crowd, and the crowd are amazingly indifferent. And then Diana gets out the car and all the barriers start collapsing as the crowds are rushing forward. You know, oh, Diana, Diana. She became the most famous woman in the world, like, instantly.
And he hated that.
He hated it. He hated it.
The competition was too much for him.
The competition was too much. He didn't like the fact his wife. And I'll tell you how we found this out. Because believe it or not, we ended up in a hotel. We, like the press pack, I was following him around. I was based in Manchester with the Express then. But one of the photographers covering this for something like Vogue or something was Snowden.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the photographer. Yeah.
He's dead now, isn't he?
He's dead now, Snowden. And before he got married to Princess Margaret, he wasn't Lord Snowden. He was just a commoner, you know.
She enjoyed a good time, didn't she, as well?
Oh, she...
He was Anthony Armstrong-Jones,
well done,
Princess Margaret, well...
Shagaroony.
But she was denied the love of her life because in those days didn't marry a divorcee.
Yeah.
And look now, all the Queen's children. Well, Edward, he didn't get divorced, did he?
No, three out of four. Yeah, three out of four did, yeah.
So great advert for marriage
and a great
example to the nation.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Royal Family.
But Lord Snowden, I mean, what a bum. You know, as you say, Anthony Armstrong-Jones. So we're all in the bar in this hotel in Llandudno one night, you know, and he comes down and he's got all these airs and graces about him, you know. And it's clearly beneath him to stay in such a hotel because even a four-star hotel in Llandudno is really not much better than a boarding house, if
Butlins,
you know what I mean.
Butlins, really, yeah.
Yeah, kind of Butlins and all that. So he comes down in the bar and sitting in the corner, you know, terribly posh and all that kind of stuff. And every time we got around him, it was, okay, Snowy, what do you want, mate? You know, not like that.
Snowy.
And he was very happy to go along with this.
Did he buy one?
I was about to tell you, very happy to go along with it, whilst he was drinking large scotches bought for him by, you know, the assembled press pack and all that, and trying to be terribly dignified, but get very pissed. So at the end, I think it was me, or it was one of my colleagues, said, right, come on, Snowy, bar closes in 10 minutes, get him in.
You're round.
And
because they don't carry money.
That's exactly what he said. He looked in utter astonishment and said, oh, I beg your pardon? Well, come on, it's your round. You get him in. You've had a dozen drinks from us tonight. Come on, you're a member of the press pack now. You're not a member of the royal family. You've been here taking pictures. Put your fucking hand in your pocket, you know, and get us a drink. I can't. What do you mean, can't?
What a tosser.
As you know, I don't carry money. I don't carry money. He said, put it on your room. He said, I'm not prepared to reveal my room number for security purposes.
Oh,
I'm really sorry, gentlemen. And ladies, I must go. Good night. And just disappear. What a bum.
You know, Princess Margaret had that house in Mystique.
Yes.
That she was gifted as a wedding present. You know, it came
from the bloke who... Colin Tennant. Colin Tennant,
so he gifted her the land.
That's right.
And she built a house called Les Joliseaux.
Right.
I know you understand French. The beautiful waters.
Les Joliseaux. That's Joliseaux.
The happy waters.
The happy waters, right.
It's a gorgeous place. So I was in Mystique. It's a tiny island, so I'm guessing on.
You were at David Bowie's house.
Staying at David Bowie's house, which was called Britannia Bay House.
Right.
And I was writing the first draft of my first Freddie Mercury book.
Right.
And David had lent me the house.
Lovely.
So the caretaker in David Bowie's house also had the keys to Les Joliseaux, Princess Margaret's calf.
And she wasn't there at the time.
She wasn't there.
Yeah.
Nobody was there. It was empty. And they didn't rent it out, obviously. So he said, do you want to visit?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we all pile off in the Land Rover on this particular day.
Yeah.
And we go into Armstrong Jones's and Princess Margaret's house.
Right.
And it's you can imagine what it was like. It was very sort of 1950s chintz.
Right, yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. There was a folder on the desk and it had, because she was patron of the Brownies.
Yeah,
the Brownie guys.
Yeah.
All these letters in there, so we read all her letters.
Yes.
Then we played hide and seek
Brilliant.
In her bedroom, jumped on her bed, hid in the wardrobe.
Did you get a great story out
had
of
a
it?
Bath. I had a bath in Princess Margaret's secret hideaway.
Lovely, yeah.
Yeah.
But she was most famous for using that after she got divorced from Snowden.
Oh, shag
and started
pad.
Shagging Roddy Llewellyn, wasn't she?
Yeah, she did, yeah.
It was much younger than her. And there was
a rumour of her and Mick Jagger. And there are pictures on the beach there and so on.
Yeah.
Because he's got a gaff there as well, just down the road.
Oh, right.
On Spaghetti Beach.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
But also, am I not right in thinking that involved a guy called John Biden, who was a career criminal. Whose famous party
Vicky
trick...
Hodges,
Vicky Hodge. Vicky Hodge was was a model who came from a titled family, right, but became a model. And John Biden was a notorious criminal because he was such a hard man. He'd gone and avenged his brother's death and got knifed almost to death in the process, survived. But his party trick was to balance 6 half-pint tumblers on his penis.
Haven't I seen you do that?
No. My goodness, what are you doing? My reputation? How? What a disgrace!
I'm sure I remember something like that from the wine press.
No, you certainly don't.
Wasn't it you?
No.
Oh,
for goodness' sake! You have never.
I suppose after five bottles of wine, every penis looks the same.
Oh dear, it's terrible. I mean, Leslie Ann Jones. You know, you're supposed to be a sophisticated, rather upright and slightly twee
lady. Who said I'm not?
You know, you really are the ultimate rock chick. You have never had observations of any part of my nefarious part of my body or anything like that.
I take it all back. I'm only joking anyway.
But what this Biden guy did was, I'm talking about pint jugs, which have a handle on them.
Right.
And he could balance them over his dick.
Six on his penis.
Six, yeah, yeah.
That makes me think, it puts me in mind, is the phrase.
Yeah.
You know that famous picture of when they were building the skyscrapers in New York and you've got the beam hanging out across...
And all the guys sitting there having their lunch.
All sitting there having their lunch.
Yeah.
With a sheer drop,
yes.
Around that makes me think of that.
Why?
But all lined up on the kind.
Oh, I see. You mean
on the branch?
Line up, yeah.
On the branch.
Yeah. But no, she was notorious, wasn't she, for the shagaroon she got herself into, and.
But she was unhappy.
Oh, she had a pointless life.
She did have a pointless life.
Absolutely pointless life.
Harry. Brings us right back round to Harry.
Well, at least Harry can now get involved with all the madness that Meghan wants him to get involved in, going to South Africa. And, yeah, I've got something here about that. Go and seashells. Go to South Africa and save the shellfish, you know.
Sussex's like,
joint battle to save South African shellfish.
That is a bit like Linda and Paul McCartney, God bless them, going into restaurants, buying all the lobsters in the tank,
and
taking them down the beach and letting
them
go so that some fishermen can come along and fish them back out tomorrow.
But I admire them trying to save lobsters. Dropping lobsters into boiling water to try and boil them out. The most horrible thing.
It is great.
Just to finish on old Princess Margaret for this part of the show, I saw once her daily schedule, which involved literally being woken by her maid at 7:30, a breakfast tray put on the bed, 20 cigarettes before she got out of bed, newspapers brought to her, a bath run for her, got downstairs for 11:30, just in time to have a sort of, you know, coffee and mid-morning snack, and then lunch always at 1 o'clock. With friends who went... Did she live in Clarence House?
So puff, 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 scoff, scoff, scoff.
Yeah.
Kensington
Palace.
Kensington Palace.
Yeah.
But this begs a question, because Princess Margaret died as the result of getting into a bath in which the water was far too hot.
She did.
So if somebody else is running her bath...
Yeah.
So who's responsible for that?
And that happened in Mustique, didn't it?
Yeah, I think it did.
Yeah, I think it did, yeah.
So who, I had a bath in that bath.
Wow.
God, I had a bath in the bath that Princess Margaret died in.
Unbelievable.
That's my claim to fame. I knew there was one.
Hey, Central Ohio, the nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
Right, okay, folks, you are listening to Planet Porky. Well, I have to say, Leslie Ann, you know, my eyes are open to some of the revelations you... Some of the outrageous statements you made in the first part of this show. You are, of course, folks, listening to Planet Porky, and we are here to inform, entertain, and sometimes, I have to say, with Leslie Ann Jones sitting on my right in this wonderful studio... to shock and...
shock and amaze on every
amaze,
page.
Yeah. Now, listen, I want to talk to you about a current story, OK?
Yeah.
And that is British Airways. Now, thing is that a couple of weeks ago, British Airways started a two-day strike. That went on for about 3 or 4 days, repercussions. Another one coming up. I am weeping inside, Leslie Ann, to see one of the world's great airlines and a great British company... falling apart in front of our eyes. I just don't like it.
I hate it. I flew British Airways to Hamburg about 2 months ago.
Right.
With two of my friends because I was going out to do some research on my new book.
Yep.
And a friend of mine said, you're not doing that by yourself. We're coming too.
Yes.
So I had two chaperones. Wonderful.
Right.
So we chose to fly British Airways because we wanted to do it professionally, properly. Yes. This was worse than Ryanair. I swear.
See, I hate to hear that.
You could not. They couldn't even decide which terminal to begin with.
Yeah.
Then it was the wrong gate. We all belted down to the gate just in time to find out that they'd changed the gate. So by the time we managed to get to the other gate in another section of the aircraft, then we had to go through security again.
Right.
Then they took all our liquids off us that we bought in duty-free because we had to go back on, you know, the other side to come through airside again.
Yeah.
Complete shambles. Everything on the plane you had to pay for. There was a time when you boarded a British Airways flight, you'd get a drink, you'd be offered a meal, you'd be offered newspapers, all this kind of thing, especially if you flew business class, which we always did as journalists.
Yes.
It's gone the other way. Mm. And we all sat there saying we should have gone Ryanair, and that is saying something. Or QueasyJet.
Well, short haul, I'm not that bothered about British Airways, although, funny enough, the last short haul I went on, I went out to join a friend in Mallorca, and I flew on one of those de Havilland jets from London City Airport, and it was brilliant. I mean, it just was, because I flew business, but on the bigger British Airways planes, business is atrocious now. I'll tell you about that in a sec. But this was just the first six rows, OK, on this little de Havilland jet. You know, the ones I'm flying. The wings go across the top of the plane, so to speak. The engines hang me.
They feel a bit flimsy to me.
Yeah. Well,
and the queues at City Airport are dreadful, by the way.
Well, they're not. That's why I went from there. Okay. I walked straight on and walked straight off.
OK, well, you were lucky.
Yeah, that's why I go from London City. And I tell you who's on the plane, Steve McManaman, very famous footballer. He's got a house in Mallorca, and he's doing some TV work in London. And we got talking to him, and it was great, you know. But it was a lovely flight, and the staff were. Now, the last long-haul flight I went on British Airways, right, very disappointing. I flew to New York at the behest of British Airways. We were actually their guests, and we went out to do a show there, myself and the guy I was working with at the time, OK? And it had been a couple of years since I'd flown across the Atlantic British Airways business, but I couldn't believe how cramped the business cabin was. I hated it because it was like you were in a cubbyhole with walls on either side. You had a little panel you could slide down, but if you did, you were staring straight into somebody else's face at sort of floor level. Do you understand? Because the seats had to go back to turn into a bed. When I wanted to get out of this cubicle in which I was ensconced in the middle of the plane, and bearing in mind I was a guest of British Airways, I thought I'd get a much better sort of cubicle near a window, I had to step over somebody's legs to get out. It was appalling.
And if you're even slightly claustrophobic, planes are claustrophobic places anyway, but if you're hemmed in by panels and walls and having to climb over people, that just adds to the sense of anxiety, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course it does. I mean, I used to love flying British Airways when they didn't have these flap beds and they didn't have cubicles and all that. They just had better, wider, more comfortable seats in business class and enough room for you to get up and pass the person on your right into the aisleway. You could have a window seat and the benefit of the view, but you also had enough room in front of you to be able to get up and walk past the person in front of you and turn right and go to the loo or whatever. So
but
I used to love
that. They've got to pack them in. They've got to pack in twice as many people.
That's
so they halve the space that you're allowed to have even in business.
And it's detracted. Class. Best flight I ever had on British Airways was I did a job in Las Vegas. And it was with a betting company or something like that. We finished, come home. There was no room left on the Virgin flight, which is direct from Vegas to back to London. So they said, look, we're awfully sorry. We put you on the British Airways flight from Los Angeles. I said, fine. So I had to fly from Vegas to LA. LAX. It was nothing, Got on the plane, the jumbo, and a bloke holding the clipboard, you know, it's you, isn't it? I said, what? You know, and I looked behind me because I thought in LA, you know, there's all sorts of famous people. Oh, it's Porky. It's you off Talk Sport. I said, yeah, it is, actually, yeah. He said, I'm your biggest fan. Me and the wife, his wife also worked on this plane, right, in the cabin crew. She said, well, your biggest fan. My son, you know, back in London, they came from Leeds. He's a big fan. Oh, have I got a seat for you? About an hour earlier, Joan Collins had cancelled her flight. And I got Joan Collins' seat, 1A.
Excellent.
On a jumbo jet flying from LA back to London. I mean, what an experience, right? And of course, when you sit down there, and I said, oh, OK. I said, well, you know, a couple of glasses, please. And then, you know, when you're serving the meal, he said, whenever you want it. It's cooked personally for you by the chef, you know, in the first class kitchen. It was fantastic. Now, I'd like to go back to that, but I get the feeling that will never happen again with British Airways.
That is a lovely experience, the first class
thing. Of course it is.
But, you know, we don't like to be elitist on this programme, do we?
No.
You know, it's, for me, the experience of a British Airways flight should be the same for those in the back as it is for those in the front. And obviously there are frills. The first class passengers
are going to
get... No,
it should be much better for those up front. You're paying more money, you're a more important person.
Okay, but it
and if you're a more
be,
important person, you deserve better attention.
Get that. But it shouldn't be shoddy for those down by the toilets.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid that is. The other great thing is working in New York in the 80s, right, and... What I really loved sometimes, I very rarely flew British Airways when I was going out to JFK or LaGuardia, because I'd normally be flying internally in America, or I'd be flying to the Caribbean, or I'd be flying to Canada or something like that. But on the couple of occasions when I decided to come home and I was coming to British Airways, I couldn't believe how good I felt. You know, when you go into JFK in New York, all of a sudden the freeway just turns into a 16...
It's terrifying.
16 lanes wide, all heading for JFK and all heading to different terminals.
Yeah.
And I said to the guy, I'm British Airways. He said, yeah, I got that, mate. You're a limey. And I felt so proud heading towards the British Airways terminal, knowing that British Airways is the only international airline at John F. Kennedy in New York with its own terminal because it's that busy.
Mm. And now I want you'd be that a bit to go embarrassed. On. Well, yeah, but you'd be a bit embarrassed. But going back to what you said just now.
No, why would I be embarrassed?
Well, no, because British Airways is not the institution that it was. The
I
same
agree.
As the monarchy isn't.
I agree.
The same as our parliament isn't.
I totally agree.
Do you remember Victor Kiam?
Yeah, I do.
The guy who loved the razor
so
much.
I loved the company so much, I bought
the company.
Bought
the company who made it, So I met him on a plane once, on a BA flight.
Oh, that's interesting.
He was down the back in Rackloss, near the toilets.
Really?
And I said, a guy with all your money, you know, why are you not up by the pilot?
Mm.
And he said, planes go in the same way. It's going to take the same time, whether I'm sitting out back or whether I'm in the front. So I pay less. And
really?
It kind of made sense.
It didn't make sense to me at all. I like a bit of comfort and all
why
that kind
waste
of stuff.
Money?
Yeah, why waste money? Now, listen, talking about situations, British Airways and all that kind of stuff, right. Mm. I am constantly reminded, because stories happen all the time, about Michael Schumacher.
Oh, poor Michael Schumacher.
And it breaks my heart.
Yeah, mine too.
It breaks my heart. This man was literally king of the world. Won more Formula One motor racing championships than anybody else, although Lewis Hamilton might very well challenge that in the next 2 years, might even catch up with him this year. But not just that, it's the manner in which he won them. He was ruthless, he was a winner, he was German efficiency personified, fabulously wealthy, goes skiing, right?
Mm-hmm. Smacks his head on a rock.
Well, it was so innocuous, the accident, because I've read over it again and again and again. Nobody knows if he went off-piste or not, but he might have gone a bit off-piste, hit a rock, falls over, and in the unluckiest break in the history of, you know, sportsmen, his helmet, and it was a properly, you know, constructed helmet.
Ergo designed,
hit the point of a rock hidden under snow and went straight through his helmet, almost as if he was speared in his head and his brain.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been a vegetable ever since.
6 years, isn't it?
Yeah. It's almost impossible to understand the agony of Michael Schumacher if he's aware of it. But what about his family?
His wife, his children.
One of his sons is a motor racing driver.
But hasn't he been transferred just
to... Well, this is the reason why I brought
hospital.
It up.
Yep.
He's now undergoing treatment in Paris for stem cell treatment, OK? And the idea is to try and reconnect something to something. I'm not sure how that works in the brain. I know that people who are in wheelchairs because their spine's been broken are ever hopeful that stem cell
will
reconnect
around
the ends of the nerves.
Yeah.
I'm very hopeful that I can have one day a stem cell injection in the left-hand side of my heart to regenerate my heart and make it better, because it's wearing out year on year now as I get older, you know, and I will soon need some sort of resurgence of the heart, you know, because it's just going to fade away. So I keep my fingers crossed for that. But do you know they spent something like, and I know I'm $100 million a year keeping him in the medical facility they've built onto his house in Switzerland.
Okay.
It's a phenomenal
they
operation.
They have the money, and there isn't any amount of money that his family wouldn't spend to get him better again.
No.
So money's irrelevant other than that it's keeping him alive. It doesn't matter how much it costs.
It's a sheer human tragedy.
Of course it is. But do you remember Natasha Richardson? Similar thing happened to her. She was Liam, actress.
No.
She was Liam Neeson's wife at the time.
Oh.
She also had a skiing accident.
Oh, is that? Yeah, of course she did.
Took
That's
a tumble,
right.
bumped her head, was checked out, said everything was fine.
Yep.
And within a couple of days, she died.
Died of an aneurysm, didn't she? Bleeding in the brain.
So ski accidents are, you know, so precarious. My elder daughter was captain of the Exeter ski team when she was at university there.
Right.
And she was in the Alps four times a year, taking groups of people, skiing off-piste.
Right.
My heart was in my mouth the entire time she was out there.
Yeah.
Skiing is incredibly dangerous.
It is incredibly dangerous. The curse of the Kennedys they talk about all the time. A member of the Kennedy family died when what they were doing was they just got rid of their sticks and they went skiing down a fairly, you know, gentle slope with an American football thrown it to each other. One of the guys wasn't looking, taking a catch, hit a tree.
Mm.
It was like a cartoon where his legs went either side of the tree and he smacked his head in the middle and died.
Yeah.
It is. It can be
incredibly dangerous.
Have you ever been skiing?
Yeah, when the kids were little, we used to go every Easter time
to
Val d'Isère.
Val d'Isère, that sounds nice.
We always stayed in the same place. We had this wonderful chalet where it was all laid on, you know, a couple of kind of little housekeepers did all the cooking and stuff.
Yes.
Lovely log fires. I lost my nerve. I used to take the odd black run. After I had my younger two children, I began to lose my nerve.
Right.
I'd stand at the top of the mountain and look down and think, oh, no.
Yes.
You know, whereas when I was much younger, I was reckless.
Well, I went skiing twice as a kid with the school.
Yeah.
We went to Interlaken in Switzerland
and
then up the mountain to a place called Wengen and Wengenalp, okay, which I remember. I so loved the beauty of the mountains under snow and the purple rocks at the top of the mountains. I so loved the fresh air. I so loved the, I don't know, the sheer freedom of being on skis and going downhill. But I was never very good at it, you know. But for some unknown reason, I never went back. I think, and for me, it's perfect because I don't like beaches. So you'd have thought, oh, well, if you don't like beaches, then go. A friend of mine,
whale watching. That's going to be your next holiday.
Very good friend of mine. Still goes skiing, although he an ex-professional footballer. He's a bit heavier now, and his knees have gone. A lot of footballers who played 20 and 30 years ago, their knees have gone because they were given injections in those days to keep them playing when they weren't really fit to play, you know what I mean? And those injections did an awful lot of damage to their knees. So, but what he likes, he can sit on the balcony of the hotel, watch everybody else skiing.
Breathe in the wonderful mountain air.
Breathe in the mountain air.
You never conquer the mountain. The mountain is king, you know.
Absolutely. And more than that,
the food's crap as well in the mountains, by the way.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, the food's...
Well, he said to me the après-ski is brilliant. You know, a couple of bottles of champers.
If you're paying $3,000 per person per week in one of those fabulous chalets, I guess the food is going to be great if you've got a personal chef.
Yeah.
But in ski resorts, the food does tend to be a bit rubbish.
Does it? Really?
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't know.
The wine's
good. I wish I'd done a lot more skiing because it's probably too late for me now.
Yeah, I would say.
Now, so you're talking about $3,000 for the food and all that kind of stuff. I saw on a completely different subject here, Leslie Ann, survey recently about tea, and I'm a big tea fan. Are you a big tea fan?
Yeah, I don't drink coffee.
Yeah, no, I don't either.
I gave it up. I went to rehab to get off coffee.
You're joking.
I'm not. I went to a very expensive rehab centre
to get off caffeine?
Because I was on 15...
Isn't there caffeine in tea?
Yeah, but less. I was on 15 cups of coffee a day.
You're joking.
When I was writing book, I start a new book,
then I
panic, and I keep myself awake around the clock on coffee. 15 mugs a day.
Yeah.
And I was shaking around the clock.
Yeah.
Couldn't stop myself shaking, couldn't
Good
sleep.
God.
So I went to this place. It worked.
Yeah.
That's 7 years ago. I've never had a cup of coffee since.
Really?
So I drink Earl Grey, and at bedtime I drink chamomile tea. It knocks me right out.
Right. That's interesting.
There's a tip for you. Free from me.
Okay, fine. Now, I like tea in the mornings, and I like tea when I'm working in studios because it does, you know, it keeps your throat lubricated and that kind of stuff. Okay. Now, this survey has got Twinings tea at the top. And then PG tips, number three, Yorkshire. Yorkshire's my favourite tea. I love Yorkshire and I buy that and I drink the Yorkshire tea bags.
So you like strong tea?
I like strong tea.
Yeah, I show it the water, the tea bag, you know. I like it weak.
I don't mind an Earl Grey if I'm in a hotel and they've got an Earl Grey on offer, that's fine.
Yeah.
What's the other, is it chamomile tea?
Chamomile at bedtime.
Chamomile,
and green tea is very good for a wake up.
Yeah.
If you want a bit of a kick throughout the day.
Now, let's move on from that then, because if you say now you're a big tea fan and all that kind of stuff, I am told that there is a rejuvenation of the tradition of the 19th century tea dances in hotels in London.
Astoria used to do that, the tea dance, yeah.
That's where I used to go, the Waldorf Astoria.
Yeah. That's nice if you can dance, if you can do the waltz and all that.
Yeah.
Can you?
No.
I can't.
But I just sat there and
give us a twirl.
Yeah.
It
says bone china, cucumber sandwiches and Battenberg cake may conjure up images of a bygone era, but afternoon tea is now undergoing a revival as a new generation helps to keep 19th century tradition. Bookings at hotels and restaurants are surging, with, surprisingly, growing numbers of young people preferring to socialise over a tower of treats than beer or wine in the pub or the
wine. So why aren't they at work in the afternoon?
Well, I suppose that, you know, they're these people who
work. This is for retirees, isn't it?
Well, I'd have thought so, but apparently they
all get it. So are they all skiving off work to go for a tea dance?
But I mean, like, you've got children, right?
Yeah.
Of varying ages. Can you imagine your children coming
home
one day and saying, oh, yes, Mum, we went to afternoon tea at the Savoy.
They would actually laugh at this. I think this kind of thing is for some guy who doesn't want to spend the money taking me out for dinner,
right,
who thinks he can get away with a cucumber sandwich and a cup of char when really he should be taking me for a proper dinner at Langen's Brasserie or the Savoy or somewhere.
Yes.
You know, I want to be taken out, treated like a lady. That's going to cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
I'm not going for tea. I'm sorry. I can't waltz. I don't do the cha-cha-cha.
No.
I don't do a quick step.
I think it's a made-up story.
I don't wear dresses either. I think it's not April the 1st, is it?
No, I've got a niece who's around about 30-ish and all that kind of stuff. She wouldn't dream.
No, they're all at work at this time of day anyway.
They're all at work at that time of day.
If I said to you, let's go for a tea dance, you'd laugh me out of this studio.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I would.
There you are.
I mean, look, you have to be careful what you drink in this day and age. Certainly with a heart that's fading rapidly. I've got to be aware of that, but I wouldn't swap any of it for a tea dance under any circumstances, okay? Right, okay, folks, you have been listening to Planet Porky. Leslie Ann, thanks once again for joining me. And, in fact, you'll be joining me again shortly. So,
thank you for having me. For those who haven't, please be patient.
Yeah, we're absolutely right. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll be back with you in the not-too-distant future. Before he got married to Princess Margaret, he wasn't Lord Snowdon. He was just a commoner, you know.
She enjoyed a good time, didn't she, as well?
Oh, she...
He was Anthony Armstrong-Jones,
well done.
Princess Margaret,
old shagaroony.
But she was denied the love of her life because in those days didn't marry a divorcee.
Yeah.
And look now, all the Queen's children. Well, Edward, he didn't get divorced, did he?
No.
But so three out of four.
Yeah, three out of four did.
So great advert for marriage.
And a great
example to the nation.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Royal Family.
But Lord Snowdon, I mean, what a bum. You know, as you say, Anthony Armstrong Jones. But his party trick was to balance 6 half-pint tumblers on his penis.
Haven't I seen you do that?
No. My goodness. What are you doing to my reputation? What a disgraceful...
I'm sure I remember something like that from the wine press.
No, you certainly don't.
Wasn't it you?
No.
Oh.
For goodness sake.
I suppose after 5 bottles of wine, every penis looks the same.
Oh, dear. It's terrible. I mean, Leslie Ann Jones, you know, you're supposed to be a sophisticated, rather upright and slightly twee
lady. Who said I'm not?
You know, you really are the ultimate rock chick.
A British Airways flight should be the same for those in the back as it is for those in the front. And obviously there are frills. The first class passengers
are going
to get...
No, it should be much better for those up front.
The service...
You're paying more money, you're a more important person.
Okay, but it
and if you're a more
be...
important person, you deserve better attention.
Hey, Central Ohio. The nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.